Commissioners meeting at 3 p.m. Wednesday, March 19th. Please call the roll.
Commissioner Fowler?
Here, ma'am.
Commissioner Hudson?
Present.
Commissioner Martin?
Here, ma'am.
Commissioner Leonard? Commissioner Clasby? Commissioner Morgan?
Yes, ma'am.
Commissioner Johnson?
Yes, ma'am. Well, now I have the invocation by Captain Elizondo. Would you please stand and then follow? We'll go right into the Pledge of Allegiance.
Lord, thank you for bringing us together today for this month's meeting. As we gather, we ask that you help our fire board and district family to discuss items and make decisions with the community's well-being in mind. We ask that you watch over our first responders and keep them safe as they continue to serve our community. Amen.
Amen.
Please join me in the pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay, we will now have proclamations and special presentations. There's some consolidation here. We will now have the Good Samaritan Award with the Public Safety Excellence Award. So, Chief Gonzalez.
Good afternoon, Fire Board. For the record, Assistant Fire Chief Brian Gonzalez. So these are some awards that are nice for us to be able to come up and give out to the public, and not only to the public, to our own personnel. It just it makes people feel good, you know, when we know that we're taking care of our own, not only our firefighters going out there even on their days off, but also when the community steps up and takes care of their own community. So this is nice to be able to sit up here. So on January 27th, we had a Lieutenant Farrell, one of our lieutenants out in the field. He was traveling down I-95 when he noticed a semi-truck had started veering off the side of the road and ended up on the side of I-95 in some really thick mud. So he immediately pulled over and started to go out to the truck to make sure the patient was okay. Around this time, a bystander, one of our citizens, Daniel Beckler, he's here in the audience right now, he actually pulled over also. So together they were able to go through the mud, get to the semi driver, and unfortunately that semi driver had a medical event. But they were able to be there with him, talk to him, and also be able to give the crews that were on their way enough information to where they can get all their equipment ready and everything together to be able to treat that patient. So for that reason, well, let's go. It's times like this that shows our firefighters are not only on duty every shift, they're on duty 24/7. It also is times like this that shows how our community steps up and are willing to give a helping hand to one another. So for that reason, we have Lieutenant Farrell, if he could please come up. He's being awarded the Public Safety Award, okay? And also Daniel Becker, if he could please come up. And for this reason, he is being awarded the Good Samaritan Award.
I'd just like to thank everybody. Just recalling that brings a lot back to me. It was a pretty scary event. I remember yelling at my mom, where is he going? Where is he going? Why is he going off the side of the road? My first instinct kicked in. A lot of my scouting training, so forth, from years ago, I just immediately jumped out of the truck and ran down and jumped over the barbed wire fence and ran up to the gentleman the whole time screaming, "Can you hear me? Can you hear me?" And he wasn't responding. And I got to the truck, and fortunately, his door was unlocked. So I opened the door, and he was having, like I said, a medical issue. He clearly had foam coming out of his mouth, and his eyes were rolling in the back of his head, and he was kind of like twitching around. So I made sure he had he was breathing, he had his airway clear. And the truck was still running, the tires were still spinning, the fuel was spilling out. And I just got the windows down, got the truck shut off, and took my shirt off and started wiping him down, because he was sweating pretty profusely, and just holding on to his arms. And I'm just grateful everybody showed up on time and was quick. And we were all heroes that day, not just myself, but everybody who helped. And I'd like to thank everybody. And thank you for this, being able to do this. And I'm also donating $100 to the Mr. Hill, the gentleman, the truck driver. I don't have much, but it's something to try and help him and his family. That's all. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
I would just like to say thank you for being recognized. This gentleman, on, you know, I have the training, so I see it pretty frequently, but for him to jump out and, you know, if we're under first aid care and get in there and shut it off, that's more credit to him than it is to me. I was just doing something that I'm trained to do, so I appreciate being recognized for it, though. Thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, we have a few, some certificates here for him.
You're going to bring your mom up with you?
Yes. She was with me.
Yeah. Part of that too. Yep.
This is the Good Samaritan Award for Daniel Beckler in recognition of your unselfishness, humanitarian, and assistance on January 27, 2025.
Thank you.
Present you with this. Yes.
But we'll do both.
All right, Chief.
Okay.
Come on.
Chief.
We'll let you guys in the middle. There you go.
Oh, okay.
Brenda's not here to direct us.
Okay.
Right?
Oh.
She's good at email.
Oh.
Thank you.
Thanks again. This certificate is for Public Safety Excellence Award for Lieutenant Michael Farrell for in recognition of your off-duty service on January 27, 2025.
Thank you.
I'll make sure.
Thank you, everybody. Have a great day.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's give another round of applause. I see here we have a Citizen Hero Award. Kaylee Cole.
Okay. Again, Fireboard, this is another... something else that we'd like to recognize, right? Now, that this individual on February 20th, our rescue crews went out to a call for a full arrest, right? And we all know that time is in the essence, right? So in order to give the patients the best chance of survival when they're in a full arrest is to be able to start CPR as soon as possible. When our citizens step up and start chest compressions when they recognize that somebody needs them, it gives them that chance of survival, right? It increases the chances so much that we're able to get there and be able to do our job, and gives us a better chance to be able to get pulses back. And that's what happened in this situation. On February 20th, Kaylee Cole was at a local Walgreens when she noticed that a citizen went down. She immediately recognized that CPR was needed. She started CPR, and our crews got there and took over, and they were able to get pulses back, which is huge. We're not sure if they would have been able to get pulses back if she wouldn't have started the CPR so early. You know, we always say, you know, prime the pump, prime that pump, and that's what she did that day. She primed the pump and gave that patient the best chance of survival. So with that being said, I'd like to recognize Kaylee Cole with the Citizen Hero Award. She's here. Kaylee, can you please come forward? And also the crew that showed up. The crew that showed up, the captain of that crew is here too, and I would like to bring him up. Captain? Okay.
I just wanted to first thank everybody for everything you guys do every day. It means a lot. I feel like when you learn CPR, you think this is great to learn and I'm going to save lives, but you never really think you're going to do anything. But I feel like that's why we learn, is to be able to save lives or help to save lives. I would do it again for anybody 10 times over. I remember that night I wasn't feeling good. I had just come off my clinical rotation. I am in school for radiology, and I stopped at Walgreens to get some medicine. I saw a man on the ground and a lot of people around him wringing their hands and just very nervous, very scared. I immediately got out and asked if anyone called 911. And I think several people said yes. I immediately got down on the ground. I asked him his name. I tried to get him to be aware or wake up. I noticed that he needed CPR, so I did start right away until help came. It's been something that's been weighing on me ever since that day. I think about it day and night. When I got the call to come get this award, I really didn't feel like a hero. I just think it's something that as people we do for each other to help. And I'm sorry, I'm very sensitive. I'm in healthcare, so that's just, I feel like, something that I would do whether I'm on the job or not. It's just something that's in me. And like I said, I would do it over again and again. And I don't know, thank you for recognizing me.
Just to touch on what Ms. Kaylee was saying, there's no doubt in my mind or the members of my crew that she made a positive outcome. We had pulses on the individual prior to leaving the scene, which is pretty significant, extremely significant. And the other part was that this was witnessed by the individual's son, so family members saw what her actions did. And as far as we know, he walked out of that hospital shortly after. So thank you. Good job. You're welcome.
And we have a certificate for Ms. Kaylee. It's the Citizen Hero Award. In recognition of heroic actions on February 20, 2025. Kaylee, congratulations, thank you.
Say, wow, what a way to start a fire board, right? Mm-hmm. It's great that in our times now that there are still heroes out there, and it's very encouraging to see. We have challenges that we're facing nationwide and statewide, but it's great to see humanity is still in existence. So why don't we proceed on? I think we have some special presentations now. I think Captain Krause, you're up to do statewide firefighter shortage, so you'll recognize, sir.
Afternoon, board members. Division Chief Chad Krause for the record.
I was asked to do a presentation on the statewide outlook in terms of firefighter employment, some of the trends that are going on. Previously, coming to administration, I was the department chair of fire science for Palm Beach State College and the Florida Fire Training Director. So through those contacts, I keep in touch, and we did some public record requests from the Florida Fire Marshal's office for some numbers and just wanted to provide those to you. So overall in Florida, we all know this, you probably had a lot of data. We went off the University of Florida study. Florida's still growing, not at the same pace, but we're still increasing. And the mid-range estimate is that between 2025 and 2030, about 1.4, 1.5 million people are going to migrate into our state. So that comes into play, and everywhere in the state, all departments are facing this growth. There's very little areas that aren't seeing the increased need for firefighters. The next trend is staffing and scheduling. There is a bill right now, regardless of whether it goes through or not, the premise of that is that they're looking to recommend a 42-hour work week for firefighters. Many organizations splattered out have throughout the state have done that. But we don't know how many firefighters that will require them to bring on. That number is really kind of a best guesstimate. So I'll share some of that with you as well. One of the barriers we have is the ability for outside of Florida firefighters to come into the state of Florida. So Chapter 633 discusses the number of clock hours required for a firefighter to come into the state of Florida. That's 492 clock hours. So if a firefighter in Georgia only has a 400-hour program, the state won't consider that as them being able to come in. They have to come in and take Fire Academy all over again. And we have a very small number of Fire Academy spots, as Chief Gonzalez will cover here in a second. So that's a big issue. And qualified instructors, to be an instructor, you have to have at least 6 years on the job. We have a very young fire organization statewide. A lot of growth means a lot of new hires. A lot of those people don't meet the requirements. Many of the training academies are in bigger areas. There's already staffing needs, so those organizations have overtime. They do extra events, and quite often those salaries for those are much higher than the colleges are paying. So it's hard for places like Valencia College to find instructors because the detail rate's $65 an hour and they're paying $28. So even if they want more classes, finding qualified instructors to put out really good candidates is becoming an issue and a concern. A lot of organizations are facing, trying to look at different ways, different options there. So this is the 5-year state forecast. The new certifications is how many are currently created in the state of Florida. New firefighters available for employment. The estimate for this year is 2,614. Now, typically attrition in the state is around 1,200, and it stays pretty close to that. However, as in the next chart I'm going to show you, there's something that happened that we're all familiar with that caused that to change quite a bit. So the new growth demand, we see that for the next couple of years, we'll have a surplus of firefighters created, but very quickly into 2028, 29, and 30, there's actually going to be more positions available than firefighters that are being created. And this doesn't include that scheduling trend because no one really knows that number. Things can change rapidly. So this is the graph, new certifications. So the arrow on the left is back in 2001, post 9/11. So we understand that there's a lot of growth happening up to the bubble. People were employing, so we started hiring. So we went from new positions, new firefighters being 1,300 to almost 2,700 at its peak. The arrow on the right is 25 years later. So after 2001, 25-year careers, 2026 is when that giant increase in firefighters that were created in the last economic upturn are now going to become eligible for firefighting or for retirement. So we're now seeing that 25. It seems strange, but it seems like 9/11 wasn't too long ago. But you know that group is now becoming eligible for retirement. So that's why we're going to see that increase to attrition from that 1,200 number to 1,800, 1,900 in the near future. So with that, if you don't have any questions, the kind of the state outlook on those things, and I'm going to turn over to Chief Gonzalez for the local level and impacts of that.
Any questions, Board?
I have one quick question. You said the
statute was going to a 42-hour work week?
So it's not requiring it. The bill, if it passes at this time, would recommend, the state fire marshal's office would recommend a 42-hour work week.
Is there a recommendation in place now?
No. So currently, 48 tends to be, okay. It's what we're on is what the majority are on. But so that no one really knows, even if it doesn't pass, some places will go to it, some won't. It's just dependent on their organizations on how they feel.
Okay, thank you.
But you did say we're currently doing 48.
Yes.
Okay, I got it. Okay. Any other questions? Or, all right, Chief Gonzalez?
Yes, sir.
All righty, we need to get one of these that extends for Chief Krause. So that was some great data from that Chief Krause was able to give us for the state of Florida, you know. But how does that affect the fire district? I guess is, you know, what we're here to say, and what can we do about it, right? So so we know that he said 1.4 million as far as the growth is concerned in the state of Florida. But, you know, for looking between 2025 to 2030, we're looking at about 38,000 new residences that could possibly be coming into our community. So what does that mean for us? That means that there's going to be an increased demand in fire. There's going to be increased demand in EMS throughout this county. So what does that mean? That means that there's going to be a need for more stations. There's going to be a need for more personnel, and there's going to be a need for more equipment. There's just no way to get around that. You know, those are the things that we have to start planning for the future, just knowing that growth is coming into our community. So training facilities. He spoke about training facilities. So here we are. Just so I was just at one of our local paramedic programs here not too long ago, actually just the other day. And one of the things that we were talking about is, you know, the people that he's graduating out of that program. And not too long ago, people would leave the paramedic program, get out of the paramedic program, and then they would seek employment and start applying places. So they would be in school for a year, and then they would start applying places. So one of the things that I asked them, I said, you know, we just went through a hiring process, or we're in the middle of it, and I recognize that there's three semesters. I recognize that your students in semester two, we didn't get too many students from semester two. They were all from semester one. And I was kind of curious why. And he said, because everybody already hired him. Mm-hmm. He said, what's happening now is as soon as they get enrolled in the paramedic program, they don't have jobs. But by the end of semester one or the beginning of semester two, either St. Lucie has picked them up, Indian River has picked them up, or somebody has picked them up because of the demand that's out there, especially for the paramedics. The training facility, our local training facility, which right now is IRSC, IRSC puts out approximately 95 firefighters a year, and that's for our four counties, you know, for Indian River, Martin County, us, and Okeechobee, so 95 a year. And like Chief Krause was talking about, the instructor positions, currently today, there's approximately 113 posted fire instructor positions statewide that are opening, and it goes back to that, you know, $22 to $28 an hour that they're paying them. And these, you know, a lot of these individuals can, you know, they can go to a detail and make a lot more. Mm-hmm. You know? So that's where we're at with the training facilities. So how do we forecast this? So right now, currently, we know that for every 1,000 residences, we run approximately 181 calls. Okay. And based on a 3.75 annual population growth, we will reach around 87,000 calls by 2030, which is an increase of 24%. And one of the statistics that actually Chief Krause was telling us not too long ago was we're at 181 calls per 1,000 residences. New York City was at around 150 calls per 1,000 residences, just to give you an idea of how busy we are and where we're going. So our current staffing demands, where are we at right now? We did hire a couple extra people here not too long ago. It's not extra. We start preparing ourselves for Station 18. Right now we have a hire that we're going through the process right now. Nine of those individuals will be to complete Station 18. And then we're going to need another 25 personnel for Station 19, an additional 25 for Station 20, mm-hmm. and through attrition. Right now, between now and 5 years from now, you're looking at the potential, right? Not the potential of 113 personnel that could possibly be retired. 4% a leave for other reasons, for whatever, whether, you know, termination, left, family problem, whatever it is. That comes to a total of about 192 firefighters that will be needed, and that's for our current demands. Yeah. On the horizon, potential for 2 to 3 stations on the horizon, looking, you know, 5 years into the future, right? Later on, you know, after that 5-year mark, that increases our staff, right? So again, we're going to have to increase staff. We have to plan for funding. How are we going to fund it? How are we going to recruit it? And the infrastructure that's there. So what are we going to do in order to make sure that this happens? You know, we need to start looking into that today, not wait till it happens. You know, we don't want to kick the can down the road. Not to mention, as we grow, right now we have 4 battalions. To keep the span of control where it needs to be, we're going to, you know, eventually, as we continue to grow, we're going to have another battalion, which would require creating 3 more battalion chief positions in order to keep that span of control where we want it. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean? Total firefighters needed. Within the next 5 years, there's a potential need for us to hire a total of 245 to 270 firefighters, because you have to include the other 2 to 3 stations that could possibly be happening within those years. So we didn't want to come in and bring you and say, oh, look, these are all of our obstacles. We wanted to let you know what we're going to do about it, right? So one of the things that one of the visions that Chief Lee had, and it's starting to come around as we start building Station 19, is a training facility. Right, so Station 19, one of the things that we have been talked about is go ahead and add a training facility to Station 19. And what could happen there is, if we build it and build it right, you know, we would be able to maybe contract with somebody and be able to start certifying our own firefighters. You know, maybe we can keep it a little bit more local. We can bring people through. We can do. We have more control over it instead of depending on our local 95 a year that IRSC puts out. Right now, a lot of our local students that are here, they have to go outside this county up towards Melbourne area or somewhere else to even go to fire school, because they can't get into IRSC because they're just not accepting as that many students, you know. So when you talk about that, is increasing the amount of classes they put out gonna fix the problem? Not really, because if there's no instructors, they can't increase the classes. So, you know, we're thinking about maybe we need to take this into our own hands and try to take care of the problem. And something that we've been doing now for a couple of years is the recruitment and community outreach officer, right? So this is something that we're expanding our current cadet program, which is huge, right? So we can cherry pick from there and start bringing those into our program, and working with they work with high schools to create new firefighter pipelines, aggressively engage in the marketing and local candidates to maintain our region recruiting advantage. And lately, that recruitment officer has also been working very closely with HR, and they've been going out to the schools and trying to work that way. So we know that there's an issue coming up in the future, and we're definitely doing our best to address it. Any questions?
Mr. Chair? Yes. So understanding that this is an issue and similar issue that we had in the city with regard to police, one of the things that we did was we did create our own police academy and work in concert with IRSC, so that all of those officers come to work for the city. But we also recognize that we're missing a lot of people. It's not just about the young, really young ones, but people have to work. They can't afford to go to the police academy and not get paid and quit their jobs. So we started paying them as cadets, and then, of course, that in turn threw up their time in the academy. And then, of course, they still have to go through field training. And so are we looking at possibly doing that as a way for recruitment as well? Because, I mean, you're only going to keep getting so many kids, so to speak. But there's that whole, like, kind of missing middle where people may want to do that, but they can't become firefighter, paramedics, or EMTs. But they can't, because they can't afford to quit their jobs in order to put themselves through the academy. And it's worked out really well. The way we've done it, we've graduated one academy. We've got another one starting this month, and we got another one already prepped for October, so we can keep recruiting and be able to get people in to be police. So is that something we could consider here?
Yeah, it's definitely something that if you go back several years, we never paid for paramedics. We pay for it today, like Chief Gonzalez was talking about. We hire people once they're enrolled. Right. A lot of times they didn't start classes. I think several of the employees that are looking to hire right now haven't even started class yet. Hmm. So we are doing that already for paramedic side. On the fire side, I could see it coming. It'd just be nicer to have our own facility to be able to do that. But yeah.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I would be in support of looking into that because, like I said, it's worked well, and with the shortages, you got to find those recruits and you got to continue
it. And we wouldn't be the first ones, right? Not too long ago, that there is a fire department that I know of in the state of Florida that's what they do. They bring them in. They bring, you know, a handful, you know, 20 individuals to come in. They actually put them through EMT school. They put them through fire school. And what they do is now they get to know these individuals for, you know, 6 months, 9 months, however long it is. And then they don't hire, I mean, they pay them while they're going through there, but they don't pick up every single one of them. What they do is the ones we want to keep, they go ahead and they hire. And the ones that they don't think is a good fit for their family, then they say, you know, you're certified. That's yep. great. And now they can enter into and they can start putting their applications elsewhere. But that is something they do. That is something that we've been talking about. And it may have to come to that.
Yep.
So one of those organizations is Orange County Fire Rescue. They had previously partnered with Valencia.
Mm-hmm.
And they were kind of letting them run the academy. The problem is fire ground space.
Mm-hmm.
So to do those drills, it's a little different than the law enforcement side where,
right.
you know, it's a premium on space. So what they had to do is that program worked for them for a little bit, but now they have their training facility and they're running their own classes. And that's something that maybe we have to build to. But Jacksonville, Orange County, Miami, some of those areas have kind of worked with their local colleges. But it's a space sort of issue. There's 492 clock hours. Is a lot of it's outside. A lot of it's in drills. If you miss a day of drills, you can't really pick that person back up. So there's a dropout rate that's pretty high. They run a class at IRC of 20 and 25, one-night class, 3-day classes of 30. But usually they 5 to 6 from every class don't make it for one reason or the other. So it is something there that... we may just need the space in order to not take up what they're already running there.
Mm-hmm. You're probably going to need both, to be honest, because got to look at different ways of doing things to be able to attract more people. So, and then also you get some people with life experience as well. So it might be, I'm for looking at both ways because I know how important space is. We're building a police training facility on our campus because we need it because there's no space. And so totally get it.
I have a couple ideas, or I just want to know, can you, the lack of instructors, can you use off-duty firefighters for instruction?
So there are some organizations that are able to do that. One of the things is because in a lot of our firefighters in their job description already is instruction.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're employing them on their days off,
mm-hmm.
The job duties are kind of similar to the point where you have to pay them overtime. That's a pretty high rate for us to pay. That's why.
So you pay them their salary plus the overtime. Is that what you're saying?
Well, just the overtime rate
okay.
versus their regular salary
right.
rate.
Okay.
So Orange County, that's one of the reasons why they tried to get their people hired on with Valencia. But then again, then they weren't taking those things. So I think there's the clever solution we can come up with. I think there's a way that we can maybe do that. But we also don't want to rob the college of their instructors as well if we start.
Can the college do more students?
To be honest with you, fire academies do not make money. They're extremely expensive. You have a 1-to-6 instructor to student ratio. It takes a long time to develop a fire instructor into that.
Okay.
It would be up to that college. It's certainly something that I think
have you approached
they already
them?
Recognized. I believe they're working on those things.
Mm-hmm.
I think we could you know, talk to Captain Kozak. He's been there for a long time. Lieutenant Sexton have been there for a long time. So they're aware of this. They're trying to make improvements. But just battling, you
right.
know, a smaller pool of people that can do it due to the time constraints. And then, again, some of those things like if you could go to the state legislature and look at that law about reciprocity and people from outside.
Right.
There's some states around us that produce really good firefighters. And we obviously want to be local. But when we see that we're going to be short 20% of the state, we have to look at outside as well.
And Florida has done that in other professions too.
Yes, absolutely.
And not have reciprocity. So maybe they need to get, we need to get over ourselves, perhaps. And I had one more, well, a couple more things. The school system, they're starting earlier with children. We just heard from Dr. Prince about the Zello program, the program where kids start much earlier, kind of identifying what they might want to be. And so also there's a culture of fitness in firefighters that needs to be encouraged at a much younger age, because we all know that, you know, this country has an obesity problem and an internet kind of being on your phone all the time and not exercising and everything. So I would think that you could encourage, you could find a way to work with the school system to encourage students younger than high school, get them to thinking about younger, because if you wait till high school, you might not capture somebody, because when people are really young, like first grade and younger, everybody wants to be a firefighter, right? Everybody wants to. So you can, if you do it younger, you can kind of keep them on that path. So that's just a couple of ideas for that.
So that, and I agree with you 100%, and that's where like our recruitment community outreach officer, where that comes in, where they're going to the schools, trying to get them as early as we possibly can to start speaking to them and start talking to them and start giving them guidance. And also our cadet program, you know, where mm-hmm. they have somebody there that can mentor them and start guiding them into the right direction to start moving it into that direction and helping them out. And, you know, start talking to them, especially with the cadet program, and we start explaining to them, you know, where maybe they can get, if they can't afford it, where maybe they can get some scholarships, you know, how to go about getting scholarships. Some of these kids don't even know where to go. You know, how do I get a scholarship? Where do I go? What do I do? What's even available to me? And those are some of the programs, and that's where it's huge for that community outreach officer to get there in the schools and get in with them, partnering up with our HR division and getting out there. It's I believe that's going to make a big difference too.
One thing, as many of you work with the school board, so Palm Beach State College ran two high school academies. I caution against that. The program sounded great. They became medical first responders, and they actually, Wellington and Palm Beach Lakes High School both had fire academies with fire engines. And they went through Firefighter One, which is the, obviously there's no live fire in it, it's the first part. And the goal was that they were going to just come to the college and run a Firefighter Two class. There was a massive difference in the skills that they received. Many of them couldn't do the Firefighter One skills when they came to us. And then just the gap between them graduating and getting into that summer Firefighter Two class, there was a very, very low success rate in those programs. There was a lot of money poured into them. Mm. I mean, they bought fire engines and hose and gear, and that was the school board there. That was completely unsuccessful, but I know sometimes that pops up as an option. It's an expensive process to train firefighters. The cadet program might be a really great way for us to do that without, I wish it was more successful down there. We tried a lot of different things, but it just ended up being teaching them Firefighter One as a senior. It did not stick. And then we saw that they were failing out and they were having to repeat. So just if you hear that from the school board, that I'm always willing to talk to you guys about that process and how it went and what our successes were and failures were.
Any other Commissioner Morgan, anybody?
Good. Yes. One more thing. So what does the lobby look like in terms of the firefighter union about getting the issue of reciprocity changed in the state with our legislators? I mean, this is crazy that you can't come, can be a firefighter in another state and you can't come and do some sort of like 2-week training or, you know, modified test. Law enforcement does, they do it for law enforcement. So what does that lobby look like? I would suspect that they'd have to start lobbying really hard and then maybe get some help from local electeds and stuff.
So the Florida Fire Chiefs Association had a meeting and met at the Florida Fire Conference. I believe that was in January. I was there. Spoke to a lot of the training directors and a lot of the chiefs, and they are asking. One of the challenges becomes is that every state has a different set of skills that they teach. What we'd like to see is that, okay, well, you had 400 hours. Well, I want to hire them on, and I'll give them the 92 hours they were missing. And in some way to complete that gap, the Fire Marshals Association put out a letter, a statement on where they stand, And their stance at this point has been that 492 clock hours is 492 clock hours, and that they have about 11-page process just to fill out to see if they'll consider you. And then you still have to come here and take the test. So I know a lot of the fire chiefs, a lot of the organizations are asking them for some sort of modified agreement where, you know, we can document this training, we can complete it during our orientation. Our orientation is very intensive. Many places, it's every bit as hard, if not harder, than the fire academy. Mm-hmm. So there's a blending that can happen there. The Florida fire chiefs are there. Obviously, some of the other associations want to keep it closed, the same reasons why you said nursing. Some of those other areas want to, you know, keep that, but that's above where the Florida Fire Chiefs Association, really other than a recommendation and trying for that. The State Fire Marshal's Office is under the Bureau of Financial Services, and that's kind of the gatekeeper to the administrative rule process, which I've been on some of those committees, and it doesn't really go very far.
Well,
it's crazy.
Yeah. I think what you're saying is, if we can help, we want to help.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. With the legislature, yep.
So, Board, there's much to be continued with this. And in my conversation with the Chief, you know, one of the things I think that we want to make sure is certainly we will advocate and on behalf of this board and people that sit here to raise it to the level, to the state level. One of the things that struck me, that big number that we're getting to, is that I can appreciate you want to look at firefighters coming from other to plug that gap, but I think we've got to start now to get our young people in Fort Pierce, Fort St. Lucie, because we're dependent on these people to be homeowners and contributing citizens.
We want them to stay here.
We want them to stay here. And so I see some gaps and opportunity there. And so we want to make sure that we're plugging those gaps and connecting those gaps in our community to start talking to these different affinity groups out here. And so I'm going to be meeting with you guys specifically because I've had my own set of challenges and things I've made observation on. And I want to make sure that I'm doing my part to connect you to civic groups that have young people already that you can at least go talk to talk about the career. Because a lot of our young people don't know the great benefit of being a firefighter or paramedic and the great retirement benefits. They're thinking right here, right now, but I'm seeing some of my friends that are retired from St. Louis County Fire, and they're doing extremely well, right? But I think we have to tell that story in a way that we capture the young people now, and we have them understand what that salary looks like and the, you know, the time on, time off, and the benefit of that. So I think there's more to be done. I think we're going to have to model this out because there's some suggestions about if we pay, then we're going to have to figure that into budgeting. So I think we got a lot of models that will be needing to come us way financially to understand this, to make the right decision that's best for us, including talking to the college about producing more than 95 spots.
Yep.
But if I hear you right, they only pay the instructors between 22 and 28 an hour.
Yeah, yep. And I agree with you. So in terms of recruiting, one thing is successful. It's not policies on paper. It's not programs on paper. It's getting out and meeting with the young people. It's in action. Every program, Wellington was less successful because people just wanted to go to Wellington High School. Palm Beach Lakes was the more successful program. It was a different community. They gave them a lot more insight into what they were doing, and they were the better performers by far. So I agree, if we can get out, and that action is really what's going to make recruitment happen.
I see no more questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Board, we're going to move on to the agenda. I don't think we have any accommodations. I don't think we have any at this point.
There's some in the back of us.
Okay.
I think it's coming.
All right. I call now for approval of the 5 board minutes for regular meeting February 19, 2025.
Move approval.
Second.
Discussion?
Discussion.
Yes. Go so fast. I was not present at the meeting.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for that noted correction.
No problem.
Morgan? So with that stated, correction to the minutes in February, we have a motion to move to second. All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion passes. All right. Addition, deletion to the agenda. If not, I'll call to set the agenda as printed.
Move approval.
Second.
Move to second and we approve the agenda as set. All in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Motion passes. We'll have approval of consent agenda.
Move approval.
Second.
Move to proper second to approve the consent agenda. Any questions? All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion passes. All right, public comments. Now's the time. We will entertain public comments. Yes, sir.
Good afternoon. My name is Mike D'Souza. I represent a company here in town called National Health Transport. We're a private ambulance company, and basically we move patients from the hospital to other hospitals throughout Florida. Mm-hmm. When fire rescue brings them in, we may move them down to Palm Beach. One of the things I want to say, I have a lot of EMTs and paramedics that I hire, and I believe Chief Gonzalez sent his recruiter by my office, because all month long they've been saying, I need this day off because I have an interview at St. Lucie. But that's not the reason I'm up here. NHT Ambulance would like to donate $1,000 to the St. Lucie Combat Challenge Team.
Oh, awesome.
Wow.
Thank you.
Wow. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, I'm going to picture of that. And sure we'll get you an official thank you letter.
Oh, you got it?
One more time.
Great, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Very nice.
No more public comments? Seeing no one movement, we'll move on. Comments from the union representative.
Not here.
Public hearings. I don't think we have any at this point. All right, unfinished business. I see none. Let's move into new business. Approval of construction manager and this contract. Attorney Sable.
Thank you. Last month, the fire board authorized Chief Lee to commence negotiations with Paul Jacklin and Sons Construction, the top-ranked firm, for a construction manager at risk contract pursuant to RFQ 24-1202. This master agreement is for a one-year term with renewal options for up to two additional one-year periods. The construction manager at risk has two roles to play within the construction process. In pre-construction, they offer assistance to other members of the design team regarding the cost of various means and methods with the goal of lowering and containing overall project costs by the means of utilizing the best choices while maintaining the desired overall quality of the project. At the end of the pre-construction phase, the CMAR will set a GMP for the construction phase of the project. The district and the CMAR would then negotiate and enter into a project-specific agreement. During construction, after the GMP is set, the fire board would then be asked to approve the GMP, which would include the CMAR fees for that phase in the form of a project agreement. The board has the right to reject the GMP and pursue the project with other GCs if desired. If the fire board chooses to accept the GMP, the fire board will be asked to approve a project agreement as an addendum to this master agreement with the CMAR, acting as the general contractor for that project. The CMAR is considered at risk because any construction cost incurred during the project that exceed the GMP must be paid by the construction manager at risk with the limited exceptions outlined in the master agreement. Approval and execution of the master CMAR agreement will allow pre-construction cost estimating, analysis of constructability, schedule preparation, and pre-qualification of subcontractors to commence. Staff recommends execution of an approval of the construction manager at risk contract.
It's on us now. The commission will take a motion.
I move approval. Second.
We move properly second that we approve the construction manager risk contract, which Attorney Sable has just read. Any questions? All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Congratulations. Welcome aboard.
Thank you.
And thank you, Mr. Jacquin. As I've said individually during our pre-meetings, he was very limited negotiation. We basically sent over our proposal. He had a couple of questions and sent it back, all while welcoming a new baby.
Wow. Congratulations.
That's right. Congrats.
Okay, so we're going to move on with the agenda. We have some fire board resolutions. Mr. Bargeron.
Yes. Yes, sir. Thank you. Resolution 772-25, budget amendment number one. Whereas subsequent to the adoption of the fiscal year 2024-2025 budget for the St. Lucie County Fire District, certain funds budgeted for the potential purchase of equipment are recommended to be utilized instead for certain software upgrades. And whereas Section 189.4186C, Florida statutes, requires the St. Lucie County Fire District to adopt a resolution to amend the budget, now therefore be it resolved by the Board of Commissioners of the St. Lucie County Fire District in meeting established this 19th day of March.
2025, these funds are hereby appropriated, and the 2024-2025 budget for the St. Lucie County Fire District is hereby amended as follows. A reduction in the 374-5229930 PPE project reserve budget, offset by an increase in the 900-5225217 software license and subscription appropriation budget. So no change in the total budget. Current budget and post-adoption, $209,554,167. Staff recommends the approval of the resolution.
Move approval.
Second.
Resolution number 772-25.
Aye.
Aye.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All right, resolution 773-25.
Yes, budget amendment number two. Whereas subsequent to the adoption of the fiscal year 2024-2025 budget for the St. Lucie County Fire District, the fire district entered into an interlocal cost share agreement with the City of Port St. Lucie for the traffic signalization station 20. And whereas section 189.4186C Florida statutes requires the St. Lucie County Fire District to adopt a resolution to amend the budget, now therefore be it resolved by the Board of Commissioners of the St. Lucie County Fire District in meeting assembled this 19th day of March 2025, the 2024-2025 budget is hereby amended as follows. Miscellaneous revenues increased $315,624, which was the amount of the interlocal that was previously approved, and offsetting appropriations for infrastructure appropriations increased $315,624. Current budget, $209,554,167, is thereby increased to $209,869,791, and staff recommends the approval of the resolution.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Move to approve second to approve resolution 773-25. All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you.
All right. Resolution number 774-25, National Public Safety Telecommunication Week.
Good afternoon. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Couldn't tell us apart, could you? No. For the record, I'm Battalion Chief Richard Hall. I'll be reading the St. Lucie County Fire District Resolution Number 774-25. Whereas the telecommunicators of the St. Lucie County Fire District, who processed over 69,349 emergency calls last year, and the first and most critical contact that our citizens have with St. Lucie County Fire District Emergency Services, and whereas these telecommunicators are the vital link to those calling for help and to firefighters and paramedics, and monitor emergency personnel's activities by radio and telephone and provide them with life-saving information to ensure their safety. And whereas the safety of SLCFD firefighters and paramedics is dependent upon the quality and accuracy of information obtained by all telecommunicators from the citizens who telephone the St. Lucie County Fire Emergency Operations Center. And whereas the telecommunicators of the St. Lucie County Fire District Emergency Communications Center have contributed significantly to the suppression of fire and the treatment of patients in life-threatening situations. And whereas each telecommunicator, who is the unseen individual providing a calm voice when emergencies arise, has exhibited compassion, empathy, and professionalism while keeping our community and its citizens safe. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the St. Lucie County Fire District does hereby proclaim the week of April 13th through the 19th, 2025, be known as National Public Safety Telecommunicators Week, and commend the St. Lucie County Fire District telecommunicators for their efforts on behalf of St. Lucie County and its citizens. Staff recommends the adoption of this resolution.
Motion.
Motion to approve.
Second.
All in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Motion passes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Comments from the fire chief.
I don't have much, Mr. Chair. I do want to go back to this resolution. I think that telecommunicators are the unsung heroes of the fire district, right? And mm-hmm. all communities around the country. And it's one of the building and off-site for most people and contact our personnel mainly by radio and phone. And so, you know, a lot of times they take a call and they never know the end result of that call. And, mm-hmm. and these men and women, they truly are the unsung heroes of the fire service and actually police service too, but mm-hmm. our specific fire. So I just wanted to give them a shout out. Okay.
Is that it? Luke Beeser?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Comments from the clerk treasurer?
Nothing to add, sir.
Okay. Comments from district attorney?
Nothing additional, thank you.
All right. Comments from board members? Let's start to the right.
Nope, no. Not today.
I'm good.
I am good. Well, I wasn't going to take your, I know you weren't there, but it's there. Still your plug.
Oh, it's my plug.
I'm leaving it to you.
Oh, well, I wasn't there because I had a doctor's appointment and also.
I filled in for you.
Yeah, you filled in. Thank you. But Michelle Backus, of course, everybody knows, is the one that does the Lifesaver mm-hmm. Networker breakfast. And today I was like, ooh, who got it? Who got it? It was Heather from Mission Barbecue, which I think is amazing, and she wasn't there.
Yep.
So everybody needs to go to Mission Barbecue when Heather's there and tell her she owes you lunch.
She's a hero.
She's a hero. So thank you, Michelle, for all you do for the firefighters.
I've actually got to get that back on my calendar. For some reason, it fell off, and I need to get that back.
It's always the day of the meetings.
Is that right?
Yep. It's breakfast.
City Hall. So I think I've got to make a couple points to get there. Any other comments, board members, before we move on? I am going to make a brief comment about this that was put on our chair here, this letter. It's interesting as we're not able to respond back. I think we will just acknowledge that we received this letter. But things like this often concern me. This and when we particularly have our whole conversation about millage rates, et cetera, I tend to want to take a more proactive step to this. And so somehow maybe communicating through newspaper, et cetera, some opinion piece may need to be updated to inform our public on obviously a perception that is not quite accurately based. To live a life, and I've done ride along with the fire department and understand that that's their community. They live there on shift and they commune as a family. They cook and eat as a family, and there are times that the dinner gets interrupted or there are times that maybe they're shopping and they have to put the groceries down and go run the call, right? So I think we need to find a way to communicate our lived experience mm-hmm. back to the public to what this person obviously is having some axe to grind.
And Mr. Chairman, yes. I have a suggestion because yes. One of the other things that is a misperception is why do all those vehicles go to, you know, when people yes. complain about that. And on our website, you have a rationale for that. That's so you have FAQs, like frequently asked questions, like, mm-hmm. and so I think that could be one.
Yes.
That could be one.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
Go ahead. So here's how I look at it. How many thousands of people do we have in St. Lucie County? 350,000?
80s, yeah, 50, 80.
One letter? Okay.
Anonymous.
See, anonymous? You know where this goes? Sorry, but this is not an issue.
I've never said it was an issue.
No, no.
I'm thinking about the 349,999 others that can really build support behind because we need their support and we need them encouraging and thanking our firefighters, even when they're off duty and saving lives out here. And I believe in the power of positivity of telling our story to the people and reinforcing the positive of what they do. I'm not trying to respond to this.
I know you're not. I'm just making a comment.
But I'd like to work with staff on some type of, I don't know who's in our communications department, et cetera, but I think this needs to be because we need to begin to tell our story. Mm-hmm. We just had information here that we're going to have a critical shortage of firefighters. That needs to be out there because we need the public's help to encourage young people to get into this as a great profession. So these are things that I think we can positively begin to communicate and ask our citizens to help. And particularly when firefighters big talk about millage. So we might as well start talking now because we got to build more stations. We got to hire more people. If they roll back this particular point of hours firefighters can work, I assume that will cause an increase perhaps in personnel that we have to hire.
Yeah.
We are all sitting officials and we're getting bombarded out of Tallahassee mm-hmm. on unfunded mandates mm-hmm. and then we have to deal with them, but then the public chastise us about not being able to deliver a service because
right.
there's only so many dollars. And so I just believe in being a little more proactive and punching back to let the public know. If they read it, so that's good. If they don't, well, we've done our part. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to work with you on that, Chief, to go forward. So that's my comment on that. We'll have a termination of February absences unless there's anything else. There's a motion for?
Motion to approve.
Do we have any?
Second.
Do we have?
Me?
Yes.
Yes.
Commissioner Morgan.
That was a slow second on that for you, counsel.
Yeah.
Just a slow second. All right, all in favor of excuse absence, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Our motion passes. All right, we'll have a motion for adjournment.
So move.
All right, means adjourned.
And Michelle, don't forget my shirt.
So have we made any?
We have. We made a little progress. So two things. You said that because, we even have some talks about, you know, we're the only county in Florida.
All right, bye. I can't believe
it. At our someone asked about property rates and millage.
Yeah, you're right.
But we didn't go.
Mark, come on. It's time to shame Mama.
We get
a
middle. Ah! Check this box.
We saw it.
What are we going to do? Yes. It's just enough where there's just enough, you know, truth, and then she throws the misdirection.
He had to tell me everything because
I know. Yep, them too. I am with you on that. I want to work on putting our message out there, getting it out there, letting people starting to know now what we're facing to combat that. April, we're having our strategic being the county. As soon as we're done, George, I already am pushing for like May with you guys. So that, quite honestly, then all three for when we're talking about like the county and it's, you know, so, you know, if you're doing a amphitheater, why are we doing an amphitheater? We don't need to keep having three of everything throughout the county. It's just insanity. Yeah.
I think we just keep pushing our mission toward each other.
Yep. Yep. Yes. 100%.
But I want to have this conversation.
Another idea would be to communicate
to the people that are coming in and they use the facilities and facilities aren't quite adequate for what it is serving here.
Actually, most of my crew do my calculations.